This is Radio Times. I'm Artie Moscoen. I was in rural Virginia at the end of May, beginning of June this year, and the sound of cicadas was deafening, a high-pitched, incessant roar, especially if you were in the woods. While it's easy to call that noise, our guest David Rothenberg hears music. He has traveled the world listening for and gathering recordings of insect sounds that he accompanies on a variety of instruments. Here's Magicicada, Worm Springs, from the CD to his new book, Bug Music. David Rothenberg is a professor of philosophy and music at the New Jersey Institute of Technology, and he joins us from the NPR Bureau in New York. And David Rothenberg, thanks for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thanks for inviting me, Marty.
What's that instrument we were hearing?
Well, I was playing the bass clarinet along with millions of singing 17-year cicadas. And you should note that piece was live. I'm sitting out there standing out in the woods in Virginia, 2012, when Brood 1 emerged in Virginia. And I'm playing along with this thrumming, gigantic, noisy, but also kind of precise drone sound that once you hear this, it starts to inhabit your dreams, take over.
Well, it's interesting because it's true. And I walked in the woods, as I said, just a couple of months ago, surrounded by this sound. And the more you listen, frankly, the more you hear.
Exactly. And it starts to just seem like a wash of white noise or just a hiss, or maybe, and then you start to hear there's a tone in there. Then you hear these little individual separate sounds. And it turns out, the more you listen, that it's really a whole complex ritual going on these insects are doing, something that humans actually knew nothing about until 17 years ago, when two scientists who are now at the University of Connecticut really decoded the complicated mating cycle of the 17-year cicada, and it surprised everyone what they found out.
Well, and we're talking about a mating cycle. Take us through this cycle, because it's pretty interesting.
Well, I'm speaking here of the sound. I mean, the cycle is interesting enough. How come millions of these creatures come out once every 17 years, or in related species, once every 13 years? What's with these prime numbers? I mean, the honest answer is we have no idea. It's just weird. It's a weird thing that evolved. And although a lot of insects, the males sing and the females find them, singing crickets, grasshoppers, katydids making all this noise. The males are making the sound. The females find them in vast choruses. It's like a giant insect discotheque or a club or a rave, you know. Katydids every summer hearing things like that. But these cicadas, you know, we kind of thought it was working like that, but it turns out the females also make a sound. And they make this very quiet flick of their wings, and then it leads the males to make successive different sounds. They have three different sounds that they make, and that it's very complicated for a bug, at least, even for humans in some ways, to go through all these steps. And why did such complexity evolve? You know, the main sound, the most common one of these 17-year cicadas, which are known as magicicadas in Latin, because it's just so magical. They make the sound that's described as pharaoh, like pharaoh, pharaoh. And there really are millions of them per acre when they come out. And altogether, you have millions of pharaohs, pharaohs, pharaohs. It all blurs together into just like one tone.
And what are the other sounds?
Well, you know, if the male hears the female make this very quiet wing flick, like a then he goes on to sound number two. He goes, pharaoh, 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 pharaoh. and then she does it again, and then he goes to and only then does he climb aboard, and mating begins silently, interestingly enough.
Evolution is amazing, isn't it?
Right, and you cannot easily say, well, this is survival of the fittest. This is the most logical way for this to happen. It's really survival of the weird, the interesting, the surprising. And I wrote another book about that, Survival of the Beautiful, which looks at such cases in detail and kind of argues that beauty and aesthetics are a big part of evolution. Each species has its own aesthetic sense. These cicadas have evolved just to like this kind of thing. It's not very useful. I mean, another view is that it is useful, it must be useful if it evolved, and it must have something to do with distinguishing this species from all the other species. So that's the simple version of the story. There's actually two other species that come out that are also singing the same time in these big emergences. And another one makes this sound that's really a wash of white noise. It goes, and that sounds more like the usual cicadas that come out every year. But what happens with these cicadas is they synchronize. You'll have millions of them synchronizing like in a wave. They're all going, and you heard both those basic sounds in the background where I was playing.
Is there any way to know? I have to say it's beautiful and arresting. Is there any way to know? Because you're in the middle of this, I guess, swarm of cicadas. You're playing your bass clarinet. Are they in any way responding to you? Are they so focused on mating? You know that they don't even hear you or see you.
I don't know if they're so focused on mating as much as they're focused on the kinds of sounds that they have evolved to respond to. So if I make a sound like I did in the beginning, you hear me making this sound. In the very beginning of what you played, I went like, shh, and then they start to wake up, you know. And then but they'll hear a bass clarinet going, and some of that sound has that quality that they like. So they will interact in very surprising ways. And the thing about these cicadas is they have no fear of people. And unlike working with just about any other animal, you know, I've done similar projects with birds and with whales, and those have their own difficulties. But these cicadas will just fly on you, and they'll walk up and they'll fly on your face and sing next to your ear, and then another one will fly somewhere else, and you can pick one up and move it here, and it will behave itself. Like they're not afraid. They don't need to be afraid. There's so many of them. That's how they win over predators. They just outnumber them. Doesn't matter how many are eaten, there are more.
You call cicadas the oldest musicians.
Insects in general, yeah. Because they've been around millions of years before all these other creatures like us have evolved, and they're making these sounds that are essential to their way of life. And I think these sounds are closer to music than to language, because they are the same things done over and over and over and over again. Like in music, you know, we don't get bored of regular beats. We like it. We like the repetition. We need to hear it again and again. Familiar songs that we like, you know, that people get kind of addicted to. We listen to over and over and over and over again. And we don't say, oh, I already heard that. I already got the news. You know, I think in the animal world, there's a lot of communication that works like that, that is much closer to music than it is to language, where a message is gotten across and then that's all we need. Music you have to hear over and over again.
Do you think in some subliminal way that the insect world has helped us develop our own rhythm patterns, for instance?
I think it's quite likely. I don't have any proof of that. It's hard to prove prehistoric things like that. But, you know, you listen to the rhythms of insects, and you imagine these are kind of rhythms that have been around for millions of years. So as humans started making music, these are sounds that we heard around us. Mm-hmm. And particularly the rhythms you hear around this time of year, katydids and crickets at night, this kind of thrumming noise that you know, it seems organized. There's some order to it. There's some patterns you hear. And the whole science of how these patterns happen, even though every individual insect is not thinking too much about the whole, is really a kind of model of how people can make music, only knowing their own particular part and it all fitting together, because everyone only knows some very simple rules. The music kind of emerges.
I want to read a poem that you include in this book, and this is a poem. It goes back, what, to 658? It's a Chinese prisoner. It's titled "A Political Prisoner Listens to Its Cicada," and the poem goes like this: "While the year sinks westward, I hear a cicada bid me to be resolute here in my cell. Yet it needed the song of those black wings to break a white-haired prisoner's heart. His flight is heavy through fog. His pure voice drowns in the windy world. Who knows if he'll be singing still? Who listens anymore to me? That is a beautiful poem. I mean, it's a heartbreakingly beautiful poem, I have to say.
Yes, and I was very amazed to find it because there's a whole story in the book that I go into in which I was really interested in what it might mean to experience being underground 17 years or 13 years and then emerge. And I decided to tie in the story of a friend of mine, Timothy Blunk, who was in prison for 13 years, to this whole cicada story. And some might consider this whole tale in chapter one kind of a long sidetrack that has nothing to do with nature, but I really thought that this is important because, for one, that's how my mind works. I drift into different stories. And I also really thought, like, you know, the whole point of this is to make these things of the natural world relevant to humans in surprising ways. And so I took Tim down to listen to cicadas, to Virginia, and to make music with them and to kind of reflect on, you know, his suffering, being stuck in jail all that time and emerging with this natural phenomenon. At the same time, I said, like, I don't know if this is a good idea because I'm kind of trivializing your story of suffering and the punishment you went through with this thing in the natural world. But he says, oh, let's do it. You know, nobody wants to talk to me about this. No one really wants to talk about what it's really like to be in prison. Let's connect it to nature. And it turned out we made a whole film about this that's going to come out soon. And,
wow.
And, you know, it was a really interesting part of the story. And I felt it was really worthwhile and worth doing. And then I also was very fortunate to come across these many volumes of poems about singing insects that an entomologist in Canada had just collected in his spare time, a man named Keith Kevin. You know, and they were just sitting in the basement of an insect museum in Montreal. And I said, I need these books. And there's five of them. They're, each one is like 600 pages in length. And so I was pouring through these. And there were so many poems, most of them from Asia, about cicadas, about crickets. And I came across this prisoner poem. I thought, that's it. You know, I'm not the only one to try and make this connection.
Yeah. And we're almost up on a break here, but a kind of a companionship with this gigantic insect world.
Yeah, that you know, people for thousands of years have tried to define themselves in connection with the nature around. And particularly in Asia, I think insects are taken seriously in a different way. The insects are considered very beautiful, very romantic, and very close to important emotions in human life. And that's why there's so much more written about them in that part of the world, China and Japan.
Well, let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation. That's David Rothenberg, our guest today on Radio Times. He's a professor of philosophy and music at the New Jersey Institute of Technology. He's written a number of books. His most recent one called Bug Music, How Insects Gave Us Rhythm and Noise. We're going to talk more after this short break and play some more selections from a companion CD that came along with this book. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, John S. and James L. Knight Foundation. Knight Foundation promotes informed and engaged communities and helps NPR advance journalism excellence in the digital age. More at knightfoundation.org.
Rock and roll is filled with memorable lyrics, but sometimes the most powerful songs say it with no words at all. I'm Jim DeRogatis.
And I'm Greg Kot. It's the best rock instrumentals this week on Sound Opinions.
Tonight at 10 on WHYY.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Next time on Here and Now, Anthony Weiner, Elliot Spitzer, two New York politicians with a lot of baggage. What are voters thinking? Also, Doctor Who fans get the news they've been waiting for about the latest incarnation of the otherworldly adventurer. That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
Supporting WHYY, Wells Fargo, working with the Women's Business Development Center of Greater Philadelphia to help provide resources to entrepreneurs throughout the region. Details on Wells Fargo's work in the small business community at wellsfargo.com/commitment. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. If you're just joining us, David Rothenberg is our guest today on the show. He's got a new book called Bug Music, How Insects Gave Us Rhythm and Noise. And again, he's a professor of philosophy and music at the New Jersey Institute of Technology, joining us from the NPR studio in New York. And we are playing selections from a CD that is a companion to this new book called Bug Music. And David, I'd like to play and have you actually set up for us. This is an excerpt from the CD. It's titled Insect Drummers 2, The Water Boatman's Loudest Penis. And I think before we hear this, we need to know what we're talking about. Go ahead.
This is the track that makes this record explicit in a category. If you want to download it, it says it's explicit because of this title. And that is a true story from the scientific world that, you know, usually, in many cases, most of the time, the bigger the animal, the louder the sound it can make. So elephants make a lot of noise. Large whales make these low songs as loud as rock concerts. And usually the small creatures are quieter, except there's one big blip in this list. So there's a tiny insect that lives underwater in the British Isles called the lesser water boatman. And it's like less than half a centimeter in length or so, a quarter inch in length. And this guy makes this huge sound underwater. It's so loud that when scientists stuck underwater microphones in a marsh in England and heard it, they said, "Where's the giant motorboat here? I don't see anything. What's wrong with our equipment?" And it turns out this water bug is vibrating his penis back and forth at astonishing speed and making a huge amount of noise. And so this story, which, you know, as you might imagine, has been widely reported, you know, online and in the news and on radio, and it was discovered by a guy named James Windmill, which is a great name.
It sure is.
And so I decided that, you know, in my further exploration beyond cicadas and crickets and katydids into the sounds of the insect world, really had to deal with this creature and its sound. And there are three pieces on the record, each called Insect Drummers 1, 2, and 3. And I'll have to say, unlike the first track we heard, this is not made out of exactly the sound of this guy, although it sounds quite like it. It's based electronically around the idea and the kind of aesthetic of the way these creatures make sound. And I was kind of playing with that idea that what kind of music do you make when you spend like a few years just listening to all these bug sounds and changing one's idea of what can count as music? How does this change what kind of sound you think can be musical? So unlike the first piece, which was recorded live in a forest, this one is made in the studio around the reconstruction of the sound of the lesser water boatman, one of the world's smallest, loudest bugs, and his, magnificent, penis vibrating dance underwater with this kind of crazy sound that nobody could believe could come from so small a creature when it was discovered just a few years ago.
Well, we are all ears. Let's listen. Again, that's an excerpt from Insect Drummers to the Waterboatman's Loudest Penis. We are talking with David Rothenberg. And again, another fascinating piece of music. And what else besides the Waterman's Penis, what else are we hearing in that?
Oh, there you have a clarinet and you have the guitar of Robert Jurjendal, who's an Estonian musician I often play along with. And we hear like kind of synthesizer sound on a computer made to sort of emulate the kinds of sounds that water boatmen and other underwater beetles make. You know, if you drop an underwater microphone into ponds and marshes, you can sometimes hear these very strange sounds that a human ear couldn't otherwise pick up because they're underwater. And sound strangely travels faster and more efficiently in water than in air. Mm-hmm. So these sounds can be very far away, and they kind of all merge together into this strange, thrumming, noisy mix.
You have a caution for this song. Do not try this at home.
Yeah, you shouldn't, like, you know, this is not, we cannot so easily make music with the same anatomy as these creatures do. But, you know, I mean, I'm sure people have tried everything, so no matter how much you warn them, nothing is enough, you know.
But you know, it's so interesting, the more you listen to these insects, and that you can hear computers, you can hear electronic music. I mean, the world that we live in now, even beyond what the insects are doing, in many ways mimics the insect world.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, while making this record, I thought, like, this is really strange. There's some very strange sounds here. Nobody is going to get it. No one's going to like it. They're going to think this is just completely crazy. But I didn't realize how much like pop music a lot of this sounds. Like, you listen to the kinds of sounds that are in pop music now, kind of strange electronic whooshing dubstep kind of noises, things that my 14-year-old son listens to. It's a lot like this, you know. So it's much more current than I thought it was. But it's no surprise because, you know, I mean, I'm hearing all those things too.
Sure.
So I didn't realize that, like, maybe it's not as unusual as I thought. Maybe it's really of the time, these kinds of sounds. But it's important for someone to say, look, it all comes from bugs. Come on, take them more seriously.
And is that part of your message here? Take them more seriously?
Absolutely. Take the sounds of the natural world seriously. We'll take nature more seriously. We won't destroy it so wantonly and imagine we are superior and our music is superior. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's really true. If you read this book, if you listen to this stuff, if you then listen outside at night, you hear a lot more. It works. You know, I was shocked. It really does work on people. And many people have told me that it's really changing how they hear the world around them. It's changing their ideas about noise. What is noise and what is music?
And what is noise? What is music? Do you make a big demarcation there?
Well, I don't try and over-define these terms that people are using different ways. I mean, the noise is basically sound that you don't like. If you hear some music you don't like, you say, this is noise. If it's bothering you, it's noise. And it's music if you decide it's worth listening to. Not just in itself, because we don't just listen to music and not focus on anything else. The sounds of people in general like the sounds of a summer night, and they see it as a kind of background music to a certain season of the year. It's easier for people to appreciate that. And not everyone appreciates cicadas and their kind of thrumming, loud, so sometimes menacing sounds. But if you think about them more, if you study them, if you visualize them, print them out as these kinds of sonogram diagrams that scientists use, you see how rich and complicated and beautiful they really are.
Well, in fact, you include some of those sonograms in your book, and one can visually see exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Let me reintroduce you, and that's David Rothenberg, our guest today on Radio Times. He has a new book called Bug Music, How Insects Gave Us Rhythm and Noise, and it includes a CD. We've been playing selections from that CD, and again, he's a professor of philosophy and music at the New Jersey Institute of Technology. As you said, you have, I guess, performed with whales, you perform with birds. Was insects just next on your list, or was there a sound or even an insect that got you thinking about the insect world?
Well, I think when the 17-year cicadas were last here in 1996, I started thinking about how amazing this was and that one day I should do something with this. And by the time I had done these two books, I started thinking this is the time for the insect book and must be written around now. It has to come out when the 17-year cicadas return. Isn't that whole 17-year cycle like a giant rhythm, like a very, very slow beat that's exact? And we know it's coming back, and isn't that one of the most amazing and longest beats and rhythms in the animal world? It's worth writing something about that and getting people to celebrate this. And so that's, I think, what made it happen this year. I knew that this was the time.
But interestingly, and then I was waiting, as I said, I was in Virginia expecting that sound to come north. It didn't really make it to Philadelphia. I'm not exactly sure why. I don't know if you know why as well.
Well, what it did is come out very intensely in certain places and just miss other ones. So that, you know, there was a lot of cicada backlash here in New York. People saying, where are all these cicadas? Didn't we see in the Daily Mail in England that billions of cicadas were going to overrun the United States? Yes, that story was there. But in fact, you know, just 10 miles west in New Jersey, there were millions of cicadas, and some places had huge amounts, others had none. In the Hudson Valley where I live, you know, some parts of town had millions of them, others had zero. And so it's some, the people who were disappointed did not look widely enough around where they were. And this is the first year that there was excellent maps that people were just putting on their, you know, through their smartphones, oh, the cicadas are here and they're here. So you could easily find out where they were at any one time. And so, but they were much more patchy than I think people expected. And I think, you know, if you missed them, if you're disappointed, next year you can go to eastern Iowa and western Illinois. Brood 3 comes out there. And the year after in East Texas, we have Brood 4. And then the year after, Brood 5 comes out in eastern Ohio. And every year they're coming out somewhere if you decide to become a cicada tourist, a cicada chaser. And you'll find there's a handful of very interesting people who do just that, who I write about in the book.
Well, indeed. I mean, it is like following your favorite band as they tour the country,
exactly,
right?
Yeah, that's right. Groupies, cicada groupies.
Exactly. I do want to play another selection from the CD for your book. This is Insect Drummers 3, Your Sound Can Kill. But tell us first about this guy named David Dunn.
Well, David Dunn is a remarkable character. He's a composer and sort of philosopher of music in a way, an inventor of very strange kind of microphones that can hear places we otherwise couldn't hear. And he figured out how to turn a meat thermometer into a microphone that could listen inside of trees. And he did this because he knew that, you know, in Santa Fe where he lives, on the whole part of the country, pine bark beetles were decimating the forests. Hundreds of thousands of acres of forest were being destroyed by these beetles that were just chewing everything to death. And they never appeared in such great numbers. And we're not sure why. It's possibly because it's getting warmer and they don't get killed in the winter time. And so he wondered what's going on inside the trees. And when he listened, he found that they had a huge amount of acoustic communication that no one imagined. These little tiny beetles, they're maybe 1/4 the size of a lesser water boatman. They're only like, you know, 1 or 2 millimeters in length. And they're kind of talking to each other, making all these crazy little sounds that sound very alien. And he started then playing strange sounds to them. He started playing the sounds of other species, the sounds of people talking. And then he found you could actually confuse them and make them sort of turn cannibalistic and start eating each other if you played them very strange sounds. And until he did this, no scientist knew that they made sound, these beetles. Because, you know, a lot of the natural world, we just don't know how to tune into their senses without sort of figuring out what those senses might be. So no one had thought that beetles inside of trees use sound in any way. And so he started experimenting with this. And so this piece, again, is one of the ones electronically synthesized out of the kinds of sound these beetles make, and the whole story about, you know, how, you know, on the one hand, these beetles are incredibly destructive, and they're kind of talking to each other about something, planning the killing all the forests, who knows. And then also you can use sound to kill them. So it's kind of playing on those ideas.
Well, let's listen. The And that's an excerpt from Insect Drummer's Three Your Sound Can Kill. It does raise an intriguing question about, you know, whether you could use sound, in a sense, to save a forest from these destructive beetles.
You know, practically it would be impossible because to broadcast the sound into the trees is hard enough. And then you've got millions of trees. So if you're broadcasting inside every tree to reach these beetles, yeah, that would be completely impractical. You can use sound to like scare woodchucks away, but that's just like from your garden. But to communicate sonically, I don't know, maybe there'd be some way to make the whole earth rumble with a sound they wouldn't like. But the fact is we have no idea how to deal with these creatures, and we don't know that much about them. But it's also possible that more acoustic study of what they're doing might lead us to learn more about what makes them proliferate, and you know, we could very well discover some surprising thing through that research that would enable us to affect this vast amount of devastation these bugs are making. Most of the insects, by the way, that make it into this book and this story are not particularly destructive or sinister, even though in general people are often afraid of bugs. And they think that they're dangerous. They think cicadas are like locusts. They're going to descend and destroy all the crops. They don't really do that much damage when they appear. And that, and yet people are somehow predisposed to fear insects sometimes, it seems, even though they're probably among the more benign and necessary parts of the environment.
I notice in this CD you play a number of different instruments. I think we have heard some of them. Do you have a main instrument that you play?
And clarinet is my main instrument. Mm-hmm. Bass clarinet is a big, dark-sounding, giant clarinet that's curved, and it's very beautiful, low, and kind of unusual sound. So those are the two main ones. I'm also playing this overtone flute that comes from Norway called a seljefløyte. And then I play iPad sometimes, where it's making, because the iPads can do anything, as you know, and they can make very strange music. And sometimes it's hard to know what they might be best at doing musically, but I think they might be best at playing along with strange creatures. Like they kind of encourage you to go in directions you don't expect. And then we have guitar on various different tracks and all sorts of electronic things that are, you know, sort of inspired by insect aesthetics, and we've taken some pieces where a sample of an insect sound is turned into something you can then play on an electronic keyboard, and it sort of changes. But I really try it not to just sort of plunk down this insect sound into music I would otherwise make, but to have the whole musical sound and structure of these pieces have been changed because of all the time I've spent taking insect music more seriously than I did before.
And we're almost up in a break here, but do you think differently about music because of insects?
Completely. I mean, you can hear that in this CD. Mm. Like, you know, it doesn't sound like things I did before. It'll be different than what I do next. It's clearly influenced by ideas of tone, noise, rhythm, and structure that come from taking the music of insects seriously on its own terms.
And that's David Rothenberg, our guest today on Radio Times, a musician and philosopher and author of a new book called Bug Music, How Insects Gave Us Rhythm and Noise. We're going to take another very short break, get back to our conversation, and get back to some more music recorded on a CD, a companion CD to this book. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The National Museum of American Jewish History supports WHYY and is now showing the exhibition The Snowy Day and the Art of Ezra Jack Keats. The exhibition invites visitors of all ages to discover more than 80 original sketches, paintings, and collages by the award-winning children's book author and illustrator. It also features a reading area for visitors to explore and enjoy the author's books. Tickets available online at nmajh.org, by phone at 215-923-3811, or at the museum.
When you watch a breathtaking performance by an athlete, do you ever wonder how much of that talent is genetic and how much comes from hard work and practice? On the next Fresh Air, journalist David Epstein tells us what scientists are learning about genetics and athletic performance. Some of it will surprise you. His book is The Sports Gene. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
Some of us are fortunate to have neighbors we like. They're folks we chat with, invite over, borrow things from, and do favors for. On the other hand, some neighbors can be a nuisance, a source of nightmares and profound anxiety. They're noisy, nasty, messy, and seem to have no consideration for the rest of the community. On the next Voices in the Family with Dr. Dan Gottlieb, bad neighbors and how to deal with them. Today at noon here on WHYY-FM.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowen. If you're just joining us, David Rothenberg is our guest today in this hour of Radio Times. He's a professor of philosophy and music at the New Jersey Institute of Technology, author of a number of books, including Why Birds Sing and Thousand Miles Song. His new book, we've been talking about bug music, how insects gave us rhythm and noise, has just been published, and his whale book and bug books are all paired with audio CDs, and we've been playing a selection from this recent CD that goes along with the bug music book. And I'm curious about the work that you did with birds, because birds are great mimics. But it seems to me, as you describe insects, you call them music machines. I mean, in certain ways, they do what they do, and they don't necessarily respond to the world that they're living in, maybe the sounds that surround them.
Well, it's interesting that, you know, as simple as insects are, as, you know, their brains and they're connected to their more machine-like bodies, insects may listen more from one species to another than birds are supposed to do.
Interesting.
Because, you know, it's always been said the bird only wants to hear its own song. That's what it really cares about. It doesn't care about all the other sounds going on. That's the standard answer, at least. But insects respond to certain rhythms, certain noises. They're much more like the little machines that biologists are sometimes accused of saying all life is, like it's all mechanistic. It's all, you know, the animals, you know, have no will, and they're like little software programs or little gadgets. Mm-hmm. But what it does is they sort of respond to certain rhythms and certain kinds of noise. So by the fact that they kind of listen to this parallel sounds around, each species, each one doesn't need to know that much, but together they make this kind of organized orchestra of sounds. Like the music emerges when no one's really in charge, nobody's planning, and some scientists have come up with specific algorithms and rules and mathematics that leads to this, and it leads to things that are very uneven and can be very beautiful. Even though there are rules you can identify that make it happen. Sometimes you tell that to people, they say, what, you're demystifying nature? But actually what you're doing is mystifying mathematics and showing that, like how do fireflies synchronize the same way crickets synchronize? You know, a simple equation shows how all it takes is one cricket. Each one sort of hears the sound that's closest to it and tries to get a little closer to it, and they all kind of come together, and they get a little confused, and they come in and out of sync. That's how you have like boop, 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 boop. It kind of comes in and out of being exact because each individual is hearing and they're not perfect. You know, the world is imperfect. So rhythm comes in and out of exactness. And all the best human music, even if it's rhythmic, you know, it has that mixture of exactness and inexactness.
And this sort of desire for synchronicity, don't you think? I mean, this human desire, I don't know if it's an insect desire, but a human desire for synchronicity.
Well, is it for synchronization or synchronicity? Synchronicity is the surprise of things actually coming in to sync, which is something we do like. And synchronization is that we want it to all have some beat. But, you know, if the beat is too exact, we find that it's not quite alive. Mm. And insects are good at teaching us how to be exact and inexact at once.
Do you think insects have helped us learn to dance? I mean, some of us dance better than others, but...
I think as human interest in regular rhythms evolved, the bugs were already there making these sounds around us. You know, everywhere where human life evolved in the hundreds of thousands of years ago, you know, insects were already well-established and already knew what they were doing as we were trying to figure out what we were going to do. So I'm sure that our sense of music is influenced by this. But, you know, it's another task to try and prove that. You know, I don't need to, because the idea is obviously so encouraging. And I tell people to go out, just listen to the rhythms of insects, and let's see what kind of rhythms you're going to make if you take these more seriously.
I do want to play another selection from your CD. This is a tree hop. And again, I'm asking you to do a lot of work here, but if you could set this up for us, that would be great.
Well, this is another example of some aspect of the sounds of the insect world that nobody knew anything about until recently. There's all these kind of tiny bugs that hop up and down stalks of trees like aphids, and they're called tree hoppers. And these creatures communicate by vibrating the stalk underneath them, you know, with an organ called a timbale, sort of like a drum head or an accordion bellows, similar to the way cicadas make sound. But tree hoppers just vibrate what they're standing on. And nobody could perceive this until they started, finding ways to translate the vibrations into sound. They put phonograph cartridges and had them attached to the stalks of trees, and now they use something called a laser vibrometer that measures the microscopic movements. And it ends up, you hear these incredibly thrumming and crazy sounds that represent the vibrations made by these very small creatures that kind of look like little thorns. Some of them disguise themselves as thorns, but they walk up and down the stalks, so, you know, very clever camouflage. But they're making these strange, very irregular, complex noises. And Rex Cockcroft at the University of Missouri in Columbia has spent the most time studying them, collecting the sounds of all these species. And this one sound of one species, the three-humped tree hopper, I use in this piece, this is one of the ones constructed in the studio. In this case, perhaps it's the first one we've heard today where it uses the actual sound of this insect turned into the inspiration for a whole piece that's kind of constructed carefully out of this sound together with bass clarinet and I can't remember what else is on it, but we'll hear and
we
see.
We will indeed, yeah, and right. Maybe we'll figure it out. Let me play a selection. This is a tree hop. Tree Hop from the companion CD to our guest David Rothenberg's new book called Bug Music. So did you figure out all the instruments in there, David?
Yeah, it's just bass clarinet and tree hopper. And so this phrase made by the tree hopper, which I've sort of stretched out, you know, and digitized, that it's just this very strange array of noises, one after another. And at first it just sounds like some strange noises. But if you realize it's made by this tiny insect and kind of slowed down so you hear the whole structure. It's this very odd phrase. It's an odd way to organize a piece of music. Let's make that the structure. We hear it transform this way. Then it repeats, and then it's changed a little bit more. So the structure of how this becomes a piece of music comes from the very odd song made by this insect that vibrates these stalks that, on which it's standing, something humans can only perceive with very advanced technology and then turn it into sound. And you end up with something like, what? You know, what kind of sense does that make?
Yeah. But what's interesting is you're a philosopher, you're a musician, and you're at the Institute of Technology. It seems that what we've been listening to today is really a combination of all those three things come together in this book and this CD.
Yes. Well, you know, it's a great place to explore such things at a school like the New Jersey Institute of Technology. It's kind of a little-known secret if you want to be kind of experimental in the arts and humanities. If you work at a technology school, they don't have so many rules of what you're allowed to do or not allowed to do. Like if I want to teach a music class where I make my students make music out of bug sounds and explore and play with their computers and have a live improvising orchestra of iPads and laptops, you know, there's no buddy there to say, you can't do that. You're not in the music department. There is no music department. This is just my idea. Why don't I do this class? And it turns out a lot of people were interested. And we have the freedom to really explore things and break down some of the boundaries that you find in more traditional institutions.
I do want to play another selection. I'm looking at the clock here as well. And this is Insect Drummers 1, and it's called Inside the Mosquito's Brain. Can you just do a quick description of this for us?
Yes, this comes from an NPR story I heard. Igor Sokolov, a scientist, I believe he was at Syracuse University, that he found out a way to listen microscopically to the molecules inside the brains of flies and mosquitoes and other insects and figured out there's really a sound you hear when the animal is alive or dead. You can hear the difference at the molecular level. And so this is an amazing thing to discover, that you could listen so microscopically and hear what is going on. So on the basis of that idea, that I put together this piece, also again out of synthesized sounds. So this is again the computer playing something based on what Sokolov's recording of inside the mosquito's brain was like, together with either clarinet or bass clarinet, depends which part you're playing.
Let's listen. Like that, David.
Well, thanks. Do you feel like you're inside the mosquito's brain? Here I'm wearing headphones listening to it. I definitely feel they're inside my brain.
Indeed.
These mosquitoes.
I'm going to squeeze one more, piece of music in, and then we're going to close with another piece of music. And let's just listen. This is called Final Creatures, and it's from David Rothenberg's companion CD to his book. Beautiful, David. Can you describe where you were when this was recorded?
Yes, this piece is different because this one's all improvised, and it's from a live concert that I did in Tartu, Estonia, in a series called Tower Music in the tower of the St. John's Church there, where only 50 people were allowed to come. They had to walk up this stone spiral staircase to the top of this tower where there's 50 seats, and we're playing, out of sounds, mixing together insect and some Estonian bird sounds, and guitarist Robert Uriendahl is playing together with me. And in the whole of this piece, there's like a whole series of different creatures that are mixed in. So it was made a kind of different way, but out of the same spirit, in a very unusual place. Like, it was a very
beautiful.
Kind of special event. Yeah.
So have you picked another animal or vegetable, mineral that you're going to explore?
I'm not sure what the next project is going to be. I think... They usually find me, these projects.
Oh, is that
right? I have one idea, and maybe it's going to be this way, and then it kind of evolves without me being in charge. And And I kind of like that, so I don't quite know where to go next, that it sort of, it just kind of arrives, and often it's something I don't expect.
Well, it's been a great pleasure, and I thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thanks so much for inviting me.
You're very welcome. And again, David Rothenberg, our guest, joining us from the NPR studios in New York. He's a professor of philosophy and music at the New Jersey Institute of Technology, the author of a number of books, including Why Birds Sing, Thousand Miles Song. And we've been talking about his most recent book. It's called Bug Music, and it's subtitled How Insects Gave Us Rhythm and Noise. And we have been playing selections from the companion CD that goes along with this particular book. And I should say that there are companion CDs for the whale and the bird book as well. And joining us as we explored the world of music and insects, Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times. Nick Sessler is our intern. Radio Times produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, and Debbie Builder with Emily Bryant today. And I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times, and you can find out much more about this program. And we're going to close things out with another selection, and this is The Year of Insect Thinking.